Welcome to Food for Thought. This is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. I do this in a number of ways, through cooking classes, an online cookbook, lectures and workshops, articles and essays, this podcast, and a cooking DVD. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting our website, www.compassionatecooks.com. Hi, everybody. I hope you're all doing very well. I was on a plane this past week, and I was thrilled to take some time to answer a bunch of your emails. I find that's actually the one time I'm completely still and able to answer mail, but I still have much more to get to. So thank you for your patience if you're awaiting a response. If you'd like to send me an email to ask me a question or offer a topic suggestion or just share your story with me, I'd love hearing your stories. You can do so by writing to podcast@compassionatecooks.com. And I promise to hop on a plane as soon as possible so I can respond in a timely manner. Thank you to those of you who have left comments on places like iTunes. I'm most grateful for any help you can provide spreading the word. So please consider adding a link from your blog page or your website or your MySpace page or whatever. Thank you for anything you can do to help spread the word. As always, I am very grateful to the podcast sponsors. If you listen regularly and have found value in this podcast, please consider sponsoring. You can make a one-time contribution or become a monthly sponsor, the information for which can be found at CompassionateCooks.com. Just click on Support Our Podcast to find out the various levels and gifts associated with those levels. Thank you in advance for whatever you can do. I'd like to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Steph Magro. I can't thank you enough for your support, Steph. Your sponsorship helps make it possible for me to do this podcast. I value each and every listener and take a lot of time to prepare each episode. So it's a very time and labor intensive process, but it really is so worth it. Thank you, as always, to the listeners, to the subscribers, and to the sponsors. Now, I've said before that the most common response to vegetarianism in general, vegetarianism as a whole, is where do you get your protein? If that's true, and I believe it is, I would say that the most common response to veganism specifically is, I could never give up cheese. Raise your hand if you have ever said, I could never give up cheese. If you've ever thought it, if you've ever murmured it, if you've ever shouted it with pride, and don't be shy, I can see you, I know who you are. I know who you are because most of us have said that, and I'm sure I said it at one time or another before I became vegan, before I gave up the cheese. So what we're going to talk about today is cheese and our addiction to it, and I do mean addiction. Whenever I hear someone say, oh my God, I could never give up cheese, and they usually say my cheese, they usually say, I can never give up my cheese, I usually think or say that just never say never. So if you're at that stage of the game, I encourage you to do yourself a favor and just stay open, just stay flexible. Don't limit yourself. Don't limit yourself by saying you could never do something. Don't give your power away to cheese. You can do anything you set your mind to. So it's not about not being able to stop eating cheese. It's about being willing to. Food is such a powerful issue. We have some very serious emotional attachments to certain things, whether it's a favorite recipe that's been handed down for generations or a favorite food-centered holiday or a particular food or product like cheese that acts as a security blanket for many people. There's a real fear that it will be taken away, and so I think that's one of the reasons we hold on to it so tightly because it's become like a security. It provides comfort. So I don't want to be accused of trying to take away anybody's security blanket. That's the last thing I want to be accused of. What I'm suggesting is that you can have your blanket and eat it too. Okay, I'm mixing metaphors, but you get the point. What I'm suggesting is that it's the feeling you get when you eat the thing and not the thing itself that you can still experience. Trust me for a bit here and tell me if there's not something to that. What I mean is that we get so attached to form and forget that it's often just a conduit for the thing we're really seeking. Let me explain what I mean using cheese as our example. I'm here to tell you right here and now that there is life without cheese. There's life without cheese. But stop shaking your head. There's life without cheese. And in fact, there's a better life. There's a healthier life. There's a more satisfying life without cheese. Okay? Stay with me. Don't turn me off yet. I think our attachment to something like cheese means that we're overlooking what's really going on. We may be seeking out comfort, and we happen to find it in cheese. Some of us find it in chocolate. Some of us find it in coffee. Some of us find it in a good book. There's nothing wrong with seeking comfort. It doesn't always have to belie some deep hidden pathology. Nothing wrong with wanting comfort. But it's important to know that that's what we're seeking, not cheese, okay? And the comfort that we're seeking can be found in many ways that don't involve cheese. So let's just stop giving cheese so much credit. It's just one form that people find comfort in. Comfort is the desire. Cheese is the form. Does that make sense? Okay, so to illustrate, maybe eating cheese triggers a nostalgic event for you. Maybe it reminds you of a trip you took, or of your grandmother who served you cheese and bread, or your family dinners when you were growing up. But you can see that what I'm getting at here is that it's the events, it's the experiences, it's the people that are meaningful to you, not the cheese. It's just acting as a trigger. When I was growing up, we had English muffin pizzas every Friday night. I never said I grew up in a gourmet household, but we had English muffin pizzas every Friday night. And I remember those days with fondness. We'd all be in the kitchen anticipating the movie we were going to watch or the game we were going to play. We all liked our pizzas made a little differently, signifying our different personalities. That's what I remember. Yeah, the pizzas were good, you know, but it could have been bean burritos every Friday night. It could have been popcorn. The point is that the food is often the trigger of a pleasant memory. And because our culture is so cheese and meat dominant, most of us have fond memories triggered by those products. If you grew up somewhere else, or if you grew up vegetarian, if you grew up vegan, it would be those foods, those family favorites that would be triggers for you. So embrace the memories, but recognize that the role the food is playing is just as a memory trigger. I hope that makes sense. Another thing, many of us are seeking out the feeling of familiarity. We're ridiculous creatures of habit, and we like that feeling of the familiar. Let's face it, not many of us are open to change. We don't embrace change very easily. How many of us go to the same restaurants over and over? How many of us order the same thing off the menu from those restaurants? How many of us have rituals when we come home from work or school or before we eat dinner or before we go to bed? When I say rituals, I mean those patterns of behavior regularly performed in a set manner, like the order in which we get ready for bed. We wash our face, we brush our teeth, we brush our hair, whatever. And we love that feeling. It grounds us. It makes us feel part of something. It gives significance to or increases our anticipation of whatever it is we're about to engage in. It also adds order to our lives. Have you ever walked out of the house without your keys because on that morning a wrench was thrown into your regular routine? You walked out of a different door or you got a phone call on the way out. Something that threw you off, so your order of things was literally upset by something unexpected. And of course, I'm not criticizing our desire for and our love of routine and ritual. I think the need for order and familiarity is very real. But when our habits or rituals become devoid of meaning, or worse yet, when they contribute harm to ourselves or someone else, it's then that I think we need to reexamine our behavior. Now, I would say that food and eating are two components of our lives where we experience ritual and familiarity on a daily basis. We're used to sitting in the same chair at the dinner table. We have a certain glass we like to drink out of. Some of us like our sandwiches cut in a certain way. We have to have a cut on the diagonal. Some of us get used to having a certain dish on a Friday night. Some of us eat in front of the TV. Some of us pray before we eat. Some of us eat from our plates in a certain order. And at the risk of implying that we all have elements of what's now termed obsessive compulsive disorder, we can't deny that eating is not just a mere act of taking in nourishment for survival. So think of some of the foods that we're attached to. In the case of those of us in the United States, we eat a lot of burgers or sandwiches. And though a burger is certainly a cultural symbol, my opinion is that it's not necessarily the meat that's stuck between two pieces of bread that we really want. It's the experience of the burger, because it's so familiar to us. It's almost more important that we just have something, whatever it is, stuck between two pieces of bread. It gives us a feeling of familiarity, whether it's made with a veggie burger or tofu or tempeh or portobello mushroom. On one level, it doesn't matter what it's made with. That's why I believe that the bottom line for most people is that if it tastes good, they'll eat it. That's what it really comes down to. Now, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong, but I think our need for having something be familiar to us is very, very important. You know, so even if it's a veggie burger that mimics the texture and taste of meat, of ground beef, or of a hamburger that's satisfying. And if that's satisfying enough, then great, that takes care of that desire. On that note, I've heard people say things like, well, secretly, vegetarians really want to eat meat or cheese. That's why they eat all that fake stuff. That's why they eat the fake meat or the fake cheese. You've heard that, right? Personally, I don't think eating vegetarian meat belies some latent desire for animal flesh. It satisfies a number of things, not the least of which is the desire for familiarity. If something looks like our favorite meat, if it smells like our favorite meat, if it tastes like our favorite meat, but an animal didn't have to be tortured and killed for us to enjoy it, then bravo. Having a vegetarian turkey sandwich may help someone transition from the animal product to the vegetarian food. And food scientists know this. They know how deep our desire is for the familiar. They make tofu turkeys with little tofu legs. They, you know, vegetarian bacon, have you seen this? And hot dogs, they're dappled with white specks to resemble the animal fat in, you know, animal-based bacon and hot dogs. Now, I personally don't need veggie hot dogs to look like animal-based ones. In fact, I'd prefer they didn't. But my point is that food manufacturers are catering to our desire for the familiar. And you know by now that I recommend these more processed foods to be treated as transition foods or treats or something eaten occasionally, once or twice a week, you know, for one meal, but not as the foundation of our diet. The other reason I think that statement is ridiculous, the one that says vegetarians secretly want meat and cheese, is because most people I know didn't stop eating animal flesh and animal products because they stopped liking the taste. They stopped eating it because it left a bad taste in their mouth, that of suffering and pain and death. I know many people who still admit to liking the smell of bacon, but who wouldn't ever think of eating it. So I just don't agree that vegetarians are harboring some secret desire for meat. I think it's just another way to try and catch vegetarians at being hypocritical or something, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Don't work with me. So the point of this whole thing is eat what's familiar to you. If it helps you to have a thing stuck between two pieces of bread, then great. If it helps you to have chunks of tempeh or tofu in your chili or pasta sauce, more power to you. If you seek out the feeling you're trying to get and stop being so attached to the thing itself, I think you'll find that you'll be much more satisfied. But wait a second, you're saying, this all sounds really nice, but cheese tastes good. It's not just a matter of seeking comfort or creating rituals or finding the familiar. Cheese tastes good. So relax. You should know by now that I had to go through all that before I come to this part. So if you think it tastes good, and from that standpoint, you don't think you could give it up, then this is what I have to say. I said just before that many people stop eating animal products, not because they stopped liking the taste, but because they didn't want to contribute to suffering and violence. That certainly was my case. Once I learned the truth about dairy cows and dairy goats and dairy sheep, there was no way I could keep eating any product that was made from the milk of these animals. It was that simple for me. Their suffering took precedence over any desire I may have had for the stuff. Even my childhood English muffin pizzas, or the ice cream that I had on a pretty regular basis, or the croissants that I loved with my tea, or the Gouda cheese that I practically lived on when I was in Holland. None of it mattered in the face of suffering. So if you're attached to cheese, but are willing to become unattached, it may be that simple for you too, but you have to be willing to know the truth. Check out my other podcast episodes about dairy cows, calcium. There are a number of them. Visit goveg.com and click on cows. You can read all about the issues with dairy, and you can watch videos. The bottom line is, if we think we can't give up cheese, it may be because we're unwilling to. Of course we can. Never say never. Now, having said all that, there is evidence that people may have a physical addiction to dairy-based cheese. In 1981, researchers discovered traces of a chemical in cow's milk that looked very much like morphine. Morphine, as you know, is a highly addictive opiate. So researchers went further to discover how it got into cow's milk. The answer was in casein, a protein found in the milk of mammals, including humans, that breaks apart during digestion to release a whole host of opiates called caseomorphine. These opiates, formed in the mother's milk of any mammal, produce a calming effect on the infant and may strengthen the mother-infant bond. According to Dr. Neil Barnard, cheese contains far more casein than is found in milk, in liquid milk from either cows or humans. It's very concentrated. So when I discovered this research, I realized, you know, it may be one of the things causing people to hold on so tightly to their cheese. I think the cultural and the personal, the familial, I think all of those habits contribute too, but there may be something to this. There may be something physical. And like drug pushers, the dairy industry makes the consumption of cheese very attractive and very appealing. include the government, whose USDA-appointed organization called Dairy Management Inc. funds advertising campaigns and fast food promotions to increase the public's consumption of dairy products. And it's working. Cheese consumption in the U.S. doubled from 15 pounds per person per year in 1975 to 30 pounds per person per year in 1999, and it's increasing. And here are some tidbits I thought you might find interesting. In 1996, Dairy Management Inc., again, this is the government-sponsored organization, they signed a contract with Subway, committing $58,000 to help the restaurant chain promote cheese and include it as a required ingredient in two new sandwiches. Dairy Management Inc. continues to work with Pizza Hut and other national chains to promote cheesy menu items that increase cheese use and sales. One result is the Ultimate Cheese Pizza that contains an entire pound of cheese per pizza. So people are not only experiencing a morphine-like reaction to dairy-based cheese, but their habits are continually encouraged by the dairy industry. That's no surprise to you by now. It never ceases to amaze me, though, that people get angry at vegetarians for telling the truth, that they think vegetarians have an agenda, and so they don't really trust what they have to say. But they don't give a second thought to the industries who pay billions of dollars to manipulate our sensibilities and make us think they're actually on our side. It makes me shudder. We need to wake up. These industries count on our ignorance. They count on our ignorance to sell their products. We need to wake up and we need to wise up. Now, with any type of substance abuse, and I think that's an apt description of our consumption of this stuff, once you get it out of your system, you'll stop craving it. That's a fact. It's a promise. I promise you. But first, you have to get it out of your system, not only out of your body, but also your palate. You have to give your palate time to adjust. You have to not eat it for a while so that your palate stops craving it. We've dulled our taste buds. We've covered everything in cheeses and cheese sauces and cream sauces and egg-based sauces that our taste buds are literally dulled. We don't know the taste of vegetables anymore. We don't know the taste of real food anymore. So we need to give our palate some time to get this stuff out of our system so that we stop craving it and we start craving, you know, less rich, less fatty food. Now, there are some non-dairy cheeses, and some are better than others. It depends on what you're looking for. But a few things. I encourage you, first of all, to be fair and judge these non-dairy cheeses on their own merit. Don't put a dairy and a non-dairy sour cream next to each other and compare them like that. They're going to be different because they're made from different substances. Also, you may prefer the old standby. You may prefer the dairy-based one, not because it's superior, but because that's what you're used to. If you were raised on non-dairy milk and cheese, that would be your preference. Also, and I think this is really important, try non-dairy cheese in the context in which it was meant to be eaten. So if you want non-dairy sour cream, for instance, and there's Tofutti. Tofutti brand has a good non-dairy sour cream, but get the non-hydrogenated one, the one that has no trans fats. You can find the non-trans fat version at Whole Foods because they don't carry any products with trans fats. But I do encourage you to support your local grocer. So if you think you're going to eat this enough that it's worth your local grocer carrying it for you, contact your local grocer, get them to carry it in their store. But again, look for the one that's the non-hydrogenated one. Wildwood had a really nice brand, but it wasn't selling enough, so they pulled it. But apparently they're coming out with a smaller tub, just a, you know, kind of a smaller container of their non-dairy sour cream. Also, you can try non-dairy yogurt for such a purpose, because remember, the purpose of sour cream is to add coolness, to balance a hot Mexican dish, for instance. But see how that's the thing you're looking for, the coolness? You can achieve the same thing with avocado or guacamole or fresh tomatoes, or you can make your own sour cream with silken tofu and some lemon juice. The point is to just remember that's the context in which it was meant to be eaten. Many times I hear from people and they say, I tried the non-dairy sour cream. I tried the non-dairy cheese and I didn't like it. And I said, well, how'd you try it? And they said, well, I took a spoon and I ate it and I didn't like it. Well, my question is, how often do you eat dairy-based sour cream with a spoon? I'm sure some of you out there do. I don't want to hear about it if you do. But the point is, don't eat it with a spoon. Eat it in the context in which it was meant to be eaten. Put it on a fajita. Put it on a burrito, put it on chili, okay? So use it in that way. It's just meant to be a condiment, all right? It's not meant to be soup. If you're looking for non-dairy cream cheese, that's also available. Tofutti makes a good one. And again, they make a non-hydrogenated. So get that version And even though it's not cheese, it's worth mentioning non-dairy and eggless mayonnaise. It's so much better than the dairy-based stuff and the egg-based stuff. And you don't have to worry about it going bad on a hot day either. You don't have to worry about getting a foodborne illness if it goes bad. Veggie-naise, mayonnaise. And I have to say again, Wildwood, they just make the most fantastic stuff. If you can get Wildwood garlic aioli, you could put this stuff on a shoe and it would taste amazing. It's the best stuff on the planet. It's a high fat food. It's an oil based spread. But again, it's just meant to be a spread, a little dip for vegetables. You can make an eggless egg salad with it. I have recipes on my website for those kinds of things, a better than chicken salad. You can use it in as a spread for a sandwich, etc. If you're looking for Parmesan to sprinkle on pizza or pasta, so what is it that you're looking for when you sprinkle Parmesan on something like pasta? What is it? You're craving what? You want a salty flavor. You want some fat. So that's what I think we're going for. So my suggestion is try toasting pine nuts. Try toasting pine nuts or walnuts, and you can even grind them up. Sprinkle them, and add a little salt. You can add a little salt when you grind them, when you toast them. Try sprinkling the pine nuts or the walnuts on your pasta or your pizza even, and see if that works, because I find that really satisfies people's cravings for the salt and the fat. You can also try nutritional yeast. Nutritional yeast is really nice. It has a cheesy flavor. You can find it as powder or flakes, and you can find that in a natural food store in the bulk section. Nutritional yeast, not brewer's yeast. Nutritional yeast is fermented on molasses. Brewer's yeast is fermented on hops, so it has a much bitter taste. So that's not what I'm recommending. Nutritional yeast. There's also a couple commercial brands available. There is a vegan Parmesan by a company called Galaxy Foods. I think they used to be Soymage, but you can find that at places like veganessentials.com. And there's also Parma, which is sold at places like veganunlimited.com, which is essentially nuts, nutritional yeast, and salt. So, same kind of thing. If you're looking for cheese pizza or grilled cheese, there are options out there. I've been eating cheeseless pizza for years. I really prefer pizza with just vegetables and herbs and spices. That's really all I need. But I remember the first time I found Follow Your Heart cheese. I know some of you know this. It's by Vegan Gourmet. And so the label might say Vegan Gourmet, will say Follow Your Heart. And it comes in four different flavors. It's cheddar, Monterey Jack, mozzarella, and nacho cheese. And I remember the first time we put this on pizza, and we lived in an apartment at the time where there was a window on the oven door. And I remember sitting in front of the oven door and watching the cheese melt, because it was novel. It was the first time I had had, good cheese that melted on the pizza, in a long time. But it was a novelty. That's all it was. Anyway, there's also Veganrella, and there's some other ones. So again, find them maybe in your larger grocery store, your larger natural grocer, and then ask your local grocer if they could carry them for you. Now, I hear about this new cheese, and I'm really anxious to try it. I know some people who have and really loved it. The problem is it's not widely available yet, but I'll spell it for you. It's from a Scotland-based company, and it's called Sheesh, like S-C-H-E-E-S-E, like just put an S in front of cheese. I think it's just pronounced Sheesh, I don't know, something like that. And it's by Butte Island Foods, and let me give you the website. It's www. Like I said, put an S before cheese, sheese.co.uk. And I hear it's really good. They have hard cheeses like Gouda, mozzarella, blue cheddar, cheddar and chives, hickory smoked cheddar, strong cheddar, medium cheddar, and Cheshire cheese as well. And then they also have creamy cheese spreads in various flavors. I hear it's really fantastic. Can't really speak for it, but I'm anxious to try it. So that's available, I know, at veganessentials.com. And then the only retail store in the country that has it is a wonderful vegan-owned little grocery, kind of gourmet grocery store in Colorado. I think they're near Boulder, called Three Little Figs, and their website is threelittlefigs.com, threelittlefigs.com. So you can try that, check it out. Now, having said all of that, because I know you're going to want me to recommend products, I don't necessarily recommend finding a replacement for every type of cheese or every dish in which you're accustomed to having cheese. Like I said before, we're so used to just bathing our vegetables in cheese sauces and cheese that we've forgotten what the true flavor of food is. So I encourage you to experience the flavor of plant foods. So for example, my pesto, the pesto I make, I don't need cheese, and I don't need any soy-based cheeses or nut-based cheeses. I don't need it. I just rely on the flavor from the walnuts or pine nuts, whatever nut you use, basil, garlic and a little bit of olive oil. And it's a fantastic pesto, a little bit of salt sprinkled in there too. You don't need to dump all that cheese in. And again, remember, my theory is that you're just going for the salt at that point. Something like I said, the pizza, I prefer the cheeseless pizza. So you can just have it without cheese. Ravioli or stuffed shells or lasagna, I make a fantastic tofu ricotta that is tofu based and it has that richness and the fullness and the creaminess. You don't need some kind of non-dairy cheese. And then risotto. Risotto is another one that we tend to put a lot of cheese in, and I make great risotto without the cheese, and it's not inferior in any way. The flavor is so fantastic, and you really taste all of the vegetables, and you taste the vegetable broth and the herbs that you put in, or however you make it. There are recipes on my website for all of these things that I'm naming. Maybe I should do a kind of a cheese alternative recipe packet. Maybe I should do something like that. And actually, I just remembered, I wanted to say this for sure, is the cookbook, Real Food Daily. Real Food Daily is a wonderful restaurant. There's actually two of them down in Southern California. One's in Santa Monica and one's in West Hollywood. Real Food Daily has a cookbook. And they have a cashew-based cheese in there that will blow you away. Buy the book. It's so amazing. It's cashew-based. It uses some nutritional yeast, some garlic, and it uses agar, which is the vegetarian gelatin that helps things set up. And so you can either not let it set up and you can mix it with macaroni and have like a macaroni and cheese, or you can let it set up and you can slice it and put it on crackers. It's so fantastic. And again, it's, you know, really great because it's based on cashews. So I'm sure we'll address the cheese issue again. I'm sure I'm forgetting something. Please let me know if there are other aspects of this issue you'd like me to address. I do this podcast for you, so I want to make sure I'm providing you with the tools and resources you need to live in such a way that reflects your values. Remember, we have no nutritional requirement for animal products, but we do have a responsibility to live in such a way that causes the least amount of harm to ourselves and to the other citizens of the world. May you join those of us who have discovered that there is indeed life without cheese, and it's a very good life indeed. For the animals, both human and non-human, this is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.